Right, welcome back to another episode of the Radelaide Summit Podcast. This week's episode, we cover our guest this week with a list of achievements longer than my bike, including an Olympic gold. Dr. Super Cyclist and Alex Doolittle rescue a bunch of kids. Local Adelaide riders ripping it up in the Oceanas, and of course more. Come along for the ride.
If you're new to the podcast and haven't listened before, each week we scour the Strava leaderboards, watching you do your efforts up north in summer and discuss them here on the podcast, whether you like it or not. There's a chance we might shame you. We promise not to name you personally, and the odds are high. We'll probably shame ourselves because we're just not as fast as you. Look, at the end of the day, our goal is to encourage and celebrate everyone going up Adelaide's best hill climb, Norton Summit, and reaching their own goals. So with that, let's introduce ourselves. We are your summiteers, Wang.
G'day.
Gashi.
How you going?
Brett.
Hi there.
And I am Alex. Welcome, guys. Welcome, listeners, to another Adelaide Summit podcast.
As always, we need to know what's been happening on or around the summit. Half wheel Harry.
Yes, that's me.
Ye old long wheelbase. What's happening?
Talking about on and around the summit this week, I did my 300th Norton this week. So
really?
Today, yep. So recovery week for me this week. I only got in that 23 hours.
Yeah,
810K. So
are you going for 40 plus this year?
Well, I'm actually on track for about 42.
I know, that's what I was like. It's more than last year. Like, it was 18 hours every week, and now it's 22, 23.
See what happens during winter.
So. Swear you're doing more now than you were.
Definitely. I wish we had Strava back then. So, yeah. So Monday, a lot of Zwift this week because of obviously the first week of no daylight savings, so it's getting dark pretty early. So
and cold.
A little bit cold, but it was nice today, so can't complain today. Monday was Nate's birthday, just Zwift, the good old triple Zwift session.
Did you work a full week?
Yep.
Holy
shit. I think we'll touch on that a bit later in the special mention. Tuesday.
What did you buy Nate for his birthday first?
He got a gaming desk.
A what? Oh, a gaming desk.
Gaming desk.
Okay.
Yeah, some special desk.
Yeah, right.
Like built-in LED lights and stuff. So
yeah, nice.
I had to put it together.
Oh, jeez.
It's still together.
So it's clean, but it might not be built properly.
Nah, I was surprised myself. So it's easy when you follow the instructions. Tuesday, another Zwift before work and lunchtime, and then just Rico ride after work. Wednesday, much the same. Thursday, some Zwift, and then got the real chamois out on Thursday night after work for a couple of paracomb. Yep.
Yeah.
A couple of paracomb loops. Friday, same deal, just a bit of Zwift and after work. I was pushing it on Friday because I didn't finish work till 5:30 and was hoping I'd get an hour in, but I was coming down Anstey's about 6:15 and it was fucking pitch black.
And you had no lights.
No lights. Yeah, I just had a flashing front and rear, but I couldn't see where I'm going. Little fucking skippy hopping alongside me going down Anstey's. I'm like, stay over there, mate. So,
you realise daylight savings finish when you get to 6 p.m. at night now.
Yeah, it's terrible. So
nothing new.
Yesterday, done supers, some rapid Norton times, as we'll touch on later. Probably one of the harder supers rides that I've done for a long time. So a few hitters out there now. And then today we done the usual Sunday church bunchy. So done a loop that went up Norton's, down Loby, Mount Torrens, Tunkillo, and then into Birdwood, stopped at the bakery there. And then we went and had, there's a little road I didn't even know there. It's called, it's the next one across from Checkers. You know when you go towards Forest Range?
I did that yesterday, I reckon.
Yeah. What's it? Something. Northworthy Road, I think it's called.
Northworthy, yeah. We did the little pinches. Yeah. We did
didn't
it yesterday.
Didn't even know it was there.
Yeah, same. Yeah. First time ever in 15 years of riding.
Did you get the car home?
Yes. That's why we went up there. So there's two comms. There's like the little one to the top of the pinch, and there's the full length one.
Yeah.
We took it off of Robert Gesink.
So there's no slouch. Flex.
And then, back home from there. And then Nate had footy this morning, so got to see the last half of his game. But I'll tell you what, drivers out there today on the road were probably the worst I've experienced for a long time. So
worse than Tour Dunedin?
That way. Yeah, worse than coming back from Wollonga. Mm. Going down Barsco Range, we were stuck behind a couple of L-plater motorbikes, so we couldn't go any faster. And this guy comes down on his motorbike on the wrong side of the road, realised he shouldn't be on the wrong side of the road, So then just coming in the middle of the bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, split the bunch. I was like, what the hell are you doing? So, and then we copped it again in Birdwood. So. But yeah, all in all, a very good week. So, what about yourself, Alex? Apart from rescuing goats.
Yeah, I was going to get into that. Exercise was pretty cruisy this week, actually. I spent more time on the tools at work, so it felt like I did 15 hours on the bike by the end of it. Did a Greek school ride on Thursday with Miss Piggy and Supercyclist, who are literally going toe-to-toe each week, which is brilliant. Supercyclist has knocked 5 seconds off her PB. So
wasn't on Strava, though.
No, it wasn't. The segment didn't come
didn't
up.
Didn't appear for him.
Yeah, it was funny. As usual gym, echelon plunge. As the like temperatures get colder, the plunge pools just feel ridiculous.
Do your ankles colder. Hurt?
My everything hurts. But then afterwards, it feels amazing. Yeah, so yesterday I went out to Birdwood and we're rolling towards Mount Torrens, somewhere along there. And yeah, there was a goat stuck in the fence. Like, literally, we're like, oh, let's go.
It was his head stuck in there?
It had the curved horns had gone through and she couldn't.
And couldn't get back out. Yeah.
So we're like, oh, let's go and see if we can get near the goat. Mm. I was like, this thing's going to try and.
Yeah, either be pissed or like.
No. Like, it must have been stuck there for ages. She was tired. Didn't care at all.
I'd
used my bike tool, unclipped the little clips around the fence, made the hole bigger, and she sat there just like grateful as fuck. And then just casually walked off and we're like, job done.
And you said she was pregnant as well.
Yeah, she was just...
she was fucking done.
Yeah,
ready to pop.
So that was pretty cool. Freed that up. Handy having my little bicycle tool on my saddle. I'm not really sure if you've seen that.
I have seen that, yeah.
And then today I just took the pooches for a walk out at Black Hill. More progress on your room, and that's about it, really. Yeah, very crazy week.
Very good.
Good. Cash wire.
I got 5 hours in on the bike, all erg. It was good. Still feel very unfit, but it'll probably be all right.
And you're not racing masters.
We are racing masters.
You're fucking not.
You should try halving that, mate. near me.
Got a couple of sessions. Climbing as well, which was good. A couple of cheeky ones on this. It's like the equivalent of doing an erg. It's called like it's a systematic board that you climb on, and it's always the same. And it's basically like doing an erg equivalent for rock climbing. It's fucking great. Anyway,
we're just down the road here.
The road. So I did that two times during the week, and then actually went on Saturday. Went and checked out this place on Norton Summit. Mm-hmm. Took G for a hike.
Saw that.
It's like a 15-minute goat track up this hill. It was great. And
where did it start?
On Old Norton Summit.
Where you're saying where all the cars park?
Yeah. So you go there and hop over the guardrail and then, hike up this like 15-minute hike.
Mm. And does it take you over to New Norton Summit?
Or? No. The other towards...
like Torch Coach Road?
Yes. Yeah, Torch Coach. Yeah. So, spend about an hour and a half up there just chilling out, and it's great.
Very nice.
Beautiful view.
So, I see you playing some hockey as well during the week?
Yeah, G's playing hockey for school.
Yeah,
so,
nice.
I just did the dad thing and got myself a hockey stick too.
Yeah.
So, then I'm just whacking the shit out of it. It's great. It's great.
And the hockey
stick? I did look up on YouTube. I was just like, what's like some skills or drills and techniques and stuff. So
you've got all the cones out on the
oval. Nah, but we did go to like... On Greenhill Road, where they're actually going to be playing games, we went out there, and so she'd get like so she understands where it is and how the ground is and all this type of thing. So it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's good.
Nice.
Yeah, and then what did we do today? Just clean the house. Yeah,
house chores.
Yeah, house chores. inside out, everything. Gurneyed, vacuumed, gurneyed. Mop.
Around.
Yeah. You know how satisfying that is.
Yeah, gurneys are so good.
I did watch Gino yesterday with the gurney. I was happy. He's very sparkly. And then drove him to the bed. He's covered in blugs.
That's it.
What about you, Mr. Brett?
Yeah.
What happened in the last week?
Yeah, geez, you guys have put me to shame. Far out. I'm making up for lost time, I should say. All the miles I did back in the day. But, this week, for a start, Has anyone ever seen me out on the road? No.
I've seen plenty of Zwift sessions.
No, exactly. Yeah. So that's I rest my case. That's pretty much where I live these days when it comes to exercise. And for me, it's just about trying to keep fit and just get a little bit on the bike. I'm still a competitor by heart, though. I guess I don't do anything. I reckon 99 out of 100 times that I'm on Zwift, I'm racing. So
really?
Yeah. So I think I've done 350 to 400
Holy
races.
Shit.
Now, so, yeah. 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 So I only race on Zwift. It sucks a little bit in a way because I've been elevated up to B grade and it's much harder to get an easier it's harder to get an easier day now. Like, you know, so like, you know, when it, yeah, even though I love to race, I, you know, there are days when I want an easy day. Like today was one of those days.
Yeah.
But so I think I've had 3 races. I can't remember what I did yesterday, let alone last week. I had a win in B grade yesterday.
Yeah,
so, and I had a 3rd place the night before. So I had, it was a short turnaround as well. A 12-hour turnaround, like from Friday night. I had a race. It was just a crit, and I think it was 30 riders in that, and then there was maybe 10 in the one on Saturday morning. So
yeah, cool.
Yeah, I tried to back up again today, and that didn't go too well. I spent most of my week, to be honest, preparing for this trip I'm about to do, which is taking a junior Australian team for the road team away, and that's a logistical absolute nightmare at the moment. So it's restricting my time.
Yeah, you were telling us off air, travel case.
Like you, Alex, I do like my ice bath. So I started off with an ice bath today. So
nice.
I don't know if I could get my head around a morning ice bath. I don't think I'd have the balls to get in. Literally,
I do like cold showers in the morning.
Don't they say cold shower first in the morning? Yeah. Especially the best thing for you to do.
Yeah, I was doing that for about 2 months before I progressed to ice bath.
To the ice bath. Mm.
Yeah.
So you've got a home.
Yeah,
job
it's just one of those. Recovery. You know, it's those circle baths.
Yeah, I've seen those ones.
I'll fill up. I've got the Belgies gave me a freezer on their way out from leaving from the World Cup. So I just started the ice baths in, and so that's helped me make sure it's cold enough because it is hard to get it cold.
Yeah, a bunch of the guys at Plunge have got like commercial freezers, like long,
just ready for the ice.
What's cheaper? Because I see these other ones that you can get that filter the water and keep it cold.
Expensive.
They are expensive. Yeah. But like, how much is a bag of ice these days? What, $3?
$5.
$5.
Yeah. $5.
Mate, Jesus, we're 2024 now.
It's a hard way to go if you're just going to fill it up with bags of ice. Like, you're going to churn through the money. Yeah. I fill up a whole heap of containers and put them in the fridge. The thing is, my partner, my fiance now, like she's always yelling at me because there's no room
just
for
food.
I love that.
It's got ice cubes in it.
With a massive ice cube.
It's like castle spec. Hey, it's like, what'd you do? Got a crate filled with water. Yeah. Chucked in the freezer.
Always going to be ice for a cold drink for her. It's just made food.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Yeah, it's changed my life.
Oh, I do love them. Yeah. Yeah, whether it's placebo or whatever, I love when I leave that place on Thursday night.
It's like having 1,000 pins and needles when you're in there, but when you get out, it's just amazing.
And also, like, it feels like it targets the areas of pain, like my back and shoulders. If I've had a work week like that, I'm just like, ugh.
See, I get in and my ankles ache so bad. I don't know what it is. So I did a test when I was in New Zealand last. Like, I was in a this waterfall and it was freaking cold. So I put everything in and left my ankles out, and I was in there for ages and it was fine. So I don't know if I've got like early onset arthritis or something. It's
It does feel like it targets the spots that might be, you know, susceptible or previous injury or something.
Yeah,
like
I don't know. I feel like I got an okay pain threshold, but that ends me every time. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Well, we did like a double in the cold pool a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that's, you got through the whole body cold, and then it just went to feet and ankles.
Oh,
like, real sore.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Not good.
No.
That's cold.
Too cold.
It's a good week.
Too cold.
Mm.
Yeah. When you're on the erg, how long do you usually go on there for?
To be honest, I'm so time poor these days. I really just pick, 30, 40 minute races, just to get it done.
Yep.
You know, 15 minute warm up, sometimes, yeah, there's times when I get on there, it's literally
at the start
five.
Line.
But yeah, I mean, I think I actually did my longest only about a week ago. It was about 70K or something. So, yeah, you know, it was, but yeah, to be honest, it's just for fitness. It's really, even though I'm racing, yes, there's still that competitiveness, but you know, but it's really just to stay on top of some fitness.
Yeah,
as I get older.
And bike on trainer.
And considering, like, you know, like, you know, a few years ago, I actually thought I'd never be able to race again, you know, or do any exercises again because I had an aorta dissection.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
So it's that was a pretty severe operation.
Yeah.
So that's probably good. Were you racing with that your whole life?
That's a good question. And something, it's always bewildered me because I guess in the when I think back, so certainly post 2000, you know, like I was still racing obviously up until about 2010.
Yep.
At the A grade level, I should say. There was a few times in 2003, 2004. So what it was my left leg would just shut down. Mm. And I'd be doing the smallest effort, you know, like up a small climb or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was just imagine the worst lactate you could possibly get in your legs. Yeah, and that's how it was on a moderate. Yeah.
Corky.
Yeah. Just literally just shut down, you know, and the reason was because I had this aorta dissection, which was around where my belly button is and where the aorta dissects out to the legs. And the dissection had caused a little flap on the aorta to actually block the blood flow to my left leg.
Holy shit!
So I was running on limited blood flow. And the funny thing was, I felt that back in 2003, 2004,
right,
which is when I won NRS Road Series.
Yeah.
And then I actually stopped riding for a while, for about 6 months, and then came back and it felt fine again. And then I raced and I think I won four super series races within 5 years, like, you know, before I sort of officially retired at 2010, I think it was. So,
that's wild.
Yeah, but it's really weird. It's like it sort of reactivated itself, or, you know, when I went to see the surgeon, the vascular surgeon, they said it took me 2 years before I'd do anything about it. I was actually playing a bit of squash, going hard at that, and wasn't cycling, but they said to me, stop exercising now, you could die.
Yeah, okay.
It already pierced, there's three layers of the aorta, like your main artery, and it already pierced one layer was coming, and the blood was coming out through a different angle.
Oh, shit.
Which was causing that flap that was stopping the blood flow to my leg. And then they said, yeah, if it bursts the artery,
you're
instantly dead.
Yeah.
Fuck. Okay.
So that stopped me riding doing any exercise for a couple of years. And I actually got to the point where I was like, I can't live like this. You know,
I was going
to
say, how's your head?
Yeah,
well, like
my head
that?
Was, you know, just being, you know, exercise being part of my life for so long, and, you know, and sport in general, you know, so I found another vascular surgeon that would give me the right answer, which was, I can do something about it. And, and he did, and they went in to do major surgery, opened me up, clamped off the artery, used a bit of inner lining of my stomach, you know, to patch the artery and fixed me up. And I knew it was okay. I knew it was good because it was this one hill that I would ride up just leaving home at the time, and I could never get to the top. It was only about 500 meters long. Mm. And the first, 6 weeks later after this major surgery, I rode straight to the top.
Straight to the
top.
Yeah. No problems at all.
Yeah, right.
So, it was funnily enough, that was almost the instigator for me to get into coaching.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Because I realised I couldn't do competitive cycling anymore. So, so the only way I was going to stay in competitive cycling as a sport was to sort of
coach.
Coaching.
Yeah.
Keep
yeah.
those competitive juices flowing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it sort of set me on a different path.
Yeah, yeah. So when did your coaching kick off? I know it's probably not the question.
I reckon it was around 2012. Tim Decker was actually the first, you know, I think he knew that he was transitioning to the national role position at that time. Like, you know, he had an inkling, but it was probably more so in 2014, I think, because he actually did do Com Games for the national team that year. And And that's they came in pretty hard with, oh, we want you to come in as a like an assistant coach at the time. I think initially it started off as a state development TID coach, and it was only for about 6 months, because I got seconded straight into the head coach role pretty quick.
Nice,
yeah,
that's awesome.
Due to Tim going away with the national team.
Good old deck the balls.
Deck the balls.
Was it a bit of a baptism of fire, like when he went over and you were just like head coach, you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, in a way, like I feel like I've been around high, the good thing was I'd been around such high-level sport all my life. I'd seen the ins and outs of it. I delved in a bit of private coaching in the post-Sydney 2000, Olympics. But, yeah, there was still a lot to learn, though, and I'm still really glad and fortunate to this day that I started at the bottom level. I'm really happy about that because I got to work with, like the kids that had never even been on a bike before, let alone on the track, just heading into that sort of domain and having to be able to coach them from just how to clip in and just how to, hang on to the fence and progress that way up through coaching was a pretty cool thing for me. It gave me a really good insight into the whole of the sport.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's awesome.
Because you've only got a couple of...
achievements. that we've listed.
Wow.
So let's just run through his achievements for all the listeners. So what do we got? 21 national titles. That's as an elite. So you've probably lost count of juniors under 17s and under 19s. They'd probably be double that amount as well. Gold in the world champs, 93 TP. And world record. I remember watching that as a kid. That was in Norway, Oslo, that year. Two gold in the 94 Com Games. Obviously the big one, gold in the Mato in the Sydney Olympics, silver in Barcelona Olympics, and bronze in Atlanta. So that's a fair palmarès, I would have thought.
It's fucking epic.
It's not even a slight flex.
No, not at all. Yeah. But do you know what your Norton PB is?
Well, funnily enough, I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but like I ran a site back in the day called Cycle2Max. And this actual climb where you're getting these times from was originally posted on Cycle2Max before Strava even come out. Well before Strava. It was a few years before, like early 2000s it was. Mm-hmm. And I held the record for a while at 12:39, and it got to a point, and that was really just training wheels, saddlebag, It wasn't like they treat it these days. It's full gas, But it got to a point where I was like, oh, I need to promote this website a little bit, and so I put it out there. I put $1,000 on the line for anyone that could beat the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. And a little unknown rider of called Jack Bobridge at the time came along, and I think he rode 11:55 or 12:06.
YouTube video of it from the car.
And that was a deal. We had to have it videoed. We wanted full proof that it was done. So
a little bit different to the what did we offer for the first person to go under 12? $50, didn't we?
And I had to give that to Nick.
And Real Shamoy got that. So, a little bit different to what we offered.
That's wild. 12:30. Damn.
It was probably well past, I think, my prime, and I guess I'd not talking to add up, but it wasn't really a thing back then.
Used to, back in the day when we used to do our strengthies, we used to go all the way to the top. We didn't stop at that segment.
We used
to go to Ashton.
Yeah.
So,
and the only reason we stopped at that section was because we had a power calculator built into Cycle2Max.
Yep.
And of course it levels off after
levels
that.
Levels out after
that. So the calculator wasn't very accurate when it leveled off. So this was, for guys, like obviously there wasn't, power meters are as on every single bike like they are these days. So, we we had this sort of inbuilt calculator that could work, work out your wattage.
I remember looking at the cycle tonight and finding some climb, and then I'd get my Merida with my little cat eye and a little speed sensor and hit the lap button and go and try and go back and compare.
The old cat's eyes.
Yeah, that was gold.
They were good. All right, so straight to the big one, Sydney 2000, race day. Can you talk through your memories, your prep, race day and post-race for that day?
Yeah, it was, well, I actually still think of my life in two parts. funnily enough, there's my life up till that point, that day, and there's my life post that, you know, and it's they're two completely separate, you know, sort of things, I guess, in a way. My whole life was being essentially a professional athlete, you know, up till that point, you know, targeting. And you have to understand, like, what is Oz Cycling today and the national team was, you know, was supported by, obviously, Australian Institute of Sport back then and the Sports Commission, but it was well-funded, you know, like, you know, to the point that, we could literally live as, you know, full-time bike riders. And we were, it's not that we were getting paid, but we were sent all over the world, you know, to train. I would literally be away for 6 months of the year, you know, like just on the funding of the Australian Cycling Program back then, you know. So it was pretty amazing. But and obviously I'm thankful for that, you know, in terms of being able to chase my goals and things like that, you know. But yeah, the Olympic gold dream started from the time I was 7 years old, I guess, you know, when I entered you know, Cycle Speedway or the Finn and Ski Kids, you know, and really sort of got involved into, you know, competitive cycling. It was a brutal way to get involved, but but it put me in good stead on, you know, when it came down to the day of the race.
I was going to say the Cycle Speedway is certainly would be because of your bike handling skills and in a bunch races, certainly would have helped you in that.
Yeah, well, like I actually first competed for Australia in Cycle Speedway before I did in cycling.
Yeah.
And I was 14 years old, and I was competing against, you know, guys that were twice my age, not just twice my age, they were twice my size. Like I was literally a 50 kilo runt, you know, competing against 100 kilo men, you know, massive sprint type men, you know, that were trying to. And cycle speedway is a sport where there's the only way to really overtake is to hip and
muscle
shoulder
your way around,
muscle your way through, you know. So I had these guys. You know, if I got in front, you know, these guys are hunting me down, you know, and literally it was ride for your life, you know, like, you know, so you had to learn to, you know, stay upright and handle your bike, quick, you know.
Take a shoulder.
But, yeah, there were a few slippery moments in the race in Sydney, which, where, you know, I had to get out of tight positions to win the points to set up the points. You know, it was a unique situation where I think we're probably still the only team that, you know, where we rode it in a way where, you know, what people don't realise about a Madison is that they think of it as one person sprinting in a Madison, but it's always two people sprinting. There's a person sprinting to set up, and there's the person that finishes off the sprint. And so my job was to set up, you know, and that's what I did best. Put Scott in the right position at the right time. So, yeah, sometimes I got caught in a pretty precarious position where I had to get myself use those old cycle speedway skills. But, yeah, the lead-in was it couldn't have gone worse.
I was going to say, you were pretty lucky to even make it to the start line.
And it started a year out, and I've still got the scar on the side of my head. From the World Championships the year before, which was the qualifying race, you know, when we had, I think we had to finish top 15 in the race, and we were actually on a good one. We just come off a World Cup win in Italy, Firenzola, I think it was, and then we went into the World Titles, and we were actually sitting reasonable favourites at that point in time. Like, you know, we were sitting second place with 10. Yeah, back then it was actually a 60K Madison as well. Yeah.
And I was made 20 points for taking a lap.
Yeah,
you just took a lap.
That's right. If you took a lap, that was it.
That was it.
Race over. And sprints were every 20 laps.
Yeah.
So yeah, the yeah we 10K to go, there's a right way to fall down the track and there's a wrong way. You can go the long way or you can go the short way. And the thing is, obviously because of the banking, if you fall down, going down to your left side, you're going to fall the long way. And that's the way I did. I was in the middle of a sprint and clipped a wheel, or someone took my front wheel out and went the long way down. And I all I remember is waking up in a German hospital in Berlin,
Yeah, right.
And in that time, we went from second place, remembering that this was the qualifying, for the Olympic Games. And Scott had to keep riding that last 10K on his own.
On his own.
And we ended up, I think it was, top 14 that automatically went through. We ended up 13th.
So Scott was just doing every sprint by himself, solo.
It was crazy. And that was really just the start of the bad luck leading into, into that, that Sydney year. So, it just sort of went from bad to worse. So, I mean, that year I was a professional with Powerman ZDL. I'd come off, I actually won the Tour Down Under sprint jersey that year.
Yep.
Yeah, that was the inaugural year. That was the first year Tour Down Under was ever on. Went with Powerman ZDL. They really employed me as a 6-day rider, but they put a lot of pressure on me as a road rider, to be honest. In the end, it was what happened was that we realised that my daughter actually, while we were overseas, had an issue and we weren't sure what it was. By the time we got to, it was actually Christmas Eve of that year, 1999. And she was diagnosed and at that point in time with cerebral palsy. Within 1 month, that turned from cerebral palsy to Rett syndrome, which is a pretty severe neurological disorder. And that was the point when I said, I'm not going to the Olympic Games in Sydney. And it was actually, I guess all of my family and friends at that time that actually turned me around and convinced me that I needed to go. But it was hard to get to that point. But when I made that decision, that was like the light just turning on for me. There was no stone unturned from that point on. There was not going to be a given single day where I wrote, as soon as I got to Europe, I wrote out this message with one of those label makers, and it said unbreakable. And then I put it on my SRM meter, which sat obviously right in front of me on my track bike, and I swore that I would never be broken in training through right up till Sydney at that point in time, and I don't think I was.
Nice.
Yeah. Which is, because everyone has bad days, but I guess, Sydney was the only year that I was injury and illness free as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was things started to turn from that point, I think, in terms of they turned for me, but they turned even worse for my partner, which was Scott McGorry.
Yeah, Scott, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So he, him and his wife at the time, had a son, Alexander. Mm. And this was only literally 2.5 months out from the games, and they found out he had a hole in his heart. It was really severe, and had a few operations, and it turned bad, and it would turn to the point where Scott had to go home. And by the time, by the time he was home, it was saying the last words to Alexander. Mm. And this is 8 weeks before the games.
Oh, far out.
So it was just getting through that next period was a
challenge.
It was a real challenge, and that's where the tables had sort of turned. In a way, he was there for me beforehand, and now I had to be there for him. So by the time we got to race day,
nothing else could go wrong.
It was we were never going to leave anything out there.
You just sort of both being just mentally drained.
Yeah, it was incredible, really, to accomplish what we did in the end, but the journey was a nightmare.
How old were you in 2000?
29. So I've been racing for 22 years at that point, and that's why I say there's two halves, you know, because my whole – that was my competitive career really up till that point. You know, I had a few small goals after that. You know, I effectively retired from international competition. I did go to Goodwill Games like in 2001, which was a big thing back then.
Yep.
Probably never going to happen, the Russia and USA thing anymore. So, Goodwill Games has fizzled out. But, I hadn't won a gold there, so I went and won a gold in Goodwill Games. I wanted to win an NRS, so I aimed for that in 2004, I think it was. So I won that in 2004, and there was really nothing else that I felt like I needed to, you know, sort of go for after that.
Yeah.
It was more just racing for fun, so, yeah.
So within that, does Sydney become your favourite or most proud effort then?
There's nothing that I don't think will ever top that. You know, like there was obviously highlight moments along the way, you know, like being on the World Championship. The first ever team that actually won a gold medal win the team's pursuit for Australia was in 93 when we broke the world record that year, you know, and that had never been done before. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool, you know, but yeah, like I was only, it was funny, you think back and I was only 22 then, but mm-hmm. you know, it was quite a tough road after that, you know, like, but at that point I'd already had a silver medal. And so I was like already thinking, okay, next step is a gold medal at Atlanta Olympics. And we went there and we still got a medal, but you know, it was a step down. It was a bronze medal, you know, so it was sort of like, you know, had to really think about, you know, think through the career. And then Ashley, my first daughter, you know, who was diagnosed with Rett syndrome, was born in 98. So it was probably, I think, the only year of that decade that I didn't try out for the national team or didn't do anything, any duties. I didn't go to Commonwealth Games. But a little thing called the Madison had just started in 95 at a world championship level, and I knew I was good at it. So I rode with Danny Clark at the first ever world champs in 95. He was 44 and I was 24 at the time.
That's so epic.
It gave me a bit of hope of, you know, what could be achievable. I think you're sort of seeing that now.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
You know, what you can achieve in your older years.
Older age,
yeah. It's incredible. But, I was the weakest link on that team, you know, that year. So, we tied for bronze. We missed out on a count back. But, it sort of set, it brought new life into me, I guess, in terms of, you know, well, this is an event I know I'm really good at. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Wow.
Now, as in the case with any elite sports at the top end, what sacrifices did you have to make as an athlete? And do you think these sacrifices differ from athletes of today?
Yeah, it's such an interesting time now how it's all going, you know, with the juniors, you know, like Jack Clark, you know, he actually had a good ride in the time trial. So he's someone I've been looking after, and I was really glad to see him do so well in the time trial at Oceania's on Saturday. You know, but he's heading off for like 6 months, you know, which that's the sort of stuff that I was doing as an elite athlete, you know, but and so, you know, that's obviously self-choice and something you can do when you are young. But I'm actually not against it because, you know, at some point in time, you know, you either make it as a pro athlete and you settle into a life overseas, and those sacrifices are obviously what it takes to be an elite level athlete, which is as I said before, it's leaving no stone unturned. So, like, you'll, even though you might only put 4 or 5 hours in on the bike, the rest of your day is thinking about recovery. And doing all the little things that you need to do to make sure that you back up for the next day. You know, so I think they're the sacrifices, and obviously the travel that you're doing, and it can be huge. I think it got harder for me as I got older, because obviously when I had Ashley, you know, it was and found out that she had, you know, a neurological disorder, it was really difficult to leave, you know, to make that commitment.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it also set me on the path for why I was doing it, yeah, as opposed to chasing this dream that was you know, really in some ways it wasn't without a purpose. Like, I always wanted to win an Olympic gold medal, but it was but what really motivated me was the sacrifices that I was making, mm-hmm, to get there. I think it's an admirable thing, just being a cyclist and a professional cyclist. You know, for anyone, any junior that's trying to do it, it's such a hard sport.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know,
it's such a brutal sport. You know, in terms of like this, and even today, like today, I'm finding it more difficult as a coach to convince, you know, younger kids, you know, in TID and stuff, you know, to make that step. And I've just taken on a few under 17s, and like they're just entered school holidays, and I'm like, and I'm like, okay, boys, yeah, we're getting some hours in, you know, like, and all of them have said to me, they said, oh, this is a bit of a step up. But the funny thing is that, you know, I'm not sure if you're aware, Matt, but I've still got your program leading into that world record ride, yeah, from back in the mid 90s, you know, and I found Ian McKenzie, because Ian McKenzie's stuff was still there, and I was looking through it. I started putting it in the Training Peaks, just to see how it tallied up. And like, these guys were doing 1200 TSS weeks back then, you know, like as juniors.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Like some of those days, like going back to Bootkin training camps, like, you know, what was our standard weeks when we were in Bootkin?
Did he have a long wheelbase back then on his bike too?
I was tandem on his own.
I was at the back. But, you know.
A standard day even was ridiculous. Yeah. You know, like
wake up in the morning, do plyometrics, stretching.
Yeah, it didn't stop all day. No. Like, you know, you'd do 10 4Ks in the morning, you know, after you'd done the plyometrics and
and then
the afternoon would be 10 2Ks, you know, on a little bit bigger gear, which is a tiny gear to what they use today.
And then you might do some flying 1Ks, like trying to hold Shane Kelly's wheel. Like,
that's so good.
Yeah. And then we'd have to go do another 35K recovery ride after all that.
Do it all again. And then race on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
Some German.
There was for like a Friday was doing that, and then you go race a crit that night.
Yeah.
You know, like a 80K crit in Germany somewhere. So you know, like the times have changed in terms of everyone's a lot more time poor these days, you know, and I think that's the culture that we're up against in cycling, and certainly as a coach, you know, to try and instill those values, you know, and those standards, because it is such a hard sport, you just can't get away with, you know, doing the soft miles, you know, like.
Has the training changed that much over the years?
It's definitely changed a lot on the track. I don't know if it's changed a lot on the road. But it has dramatically changed on the track, you know, in terms of way less volume.
Yeah.
Much bigger gears, a lot more strength training, but there's still a massive aerobic need. Like it's not like it's just that it's not been done on a track as much. It's been done more on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Spano, go on. Ask it.
My favourite question. We always love to know. So back in the day, you would have been a breakfast man because you were sponsored by Sustain back in the day. So were you a breakfast man, and what was it? And cheap meal, Zinger burger, good or bad?
I thought I might go to ask these questions. It's funny, like, because let's just go straight to KFC for a start.
Please do.
I've never had a Zinger burger.
Really?
No.
Okay.
But my order is always the same. I do love KFC.
Yep.
But it's a 3-piece feed that I'll get every single time, without fail. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
I just
like a better.
It's the same. Yeah.
Yeah. My My fiance is more of a Zinger burger.
Zinger burger?
Yeah,
good girl. Can see why you fell in love with her. And breakfast back in the day?
Yeah, breakfast.
Mate, we used to get cartons of Sustain. We used to have to eat it.
The thing about breakfast is what really stands out to me is breakfast when you're at altitude.
Yeah.
Like in Mexico, you know, like when we used to do the road stuff in Mexico and stuff. Because the breakfast was insane.
Oh, it was
it was literally insane, and I don't think there weren't many that topped me when it came to a big breakfast. I had really big metabolism.
Yeah,
you know, into just burnt anything that I ate. So I wish it was like that these days. but yeah, like I would start off like in Mexico. I would start with a big bowl of cereal. And then I would go have like some bacon and eggs, you know, a couple of pieces of toast. And then I would do a 5-layered pancake stack.
Yeah, those pancakes were so good.
Those pancakes were so good in Mexico, though.
It was insane, like the amount of calories, you know, like just at breakfast, you know, because we were doing big days.
We were doing 300K days.
300K days, you know, like in Mexico.
So. Our recovery days were 120.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. Yeah. So that's what stands out to me the most is those days at altitude.
That was my first ARS training camp, was that Mexico trip. So
yeah, right. And
I think it was myself, you, Craigie, we crashed on the first day that we got there.
Yeah, right. That wasn't the one where they hit the dog on the descent. Yeah, you know, like, and
four of us went off into the dirt
because there was so much roadkill there.
Oh, like, you know, like, ridiculous.
Dogs would just be, you know, bolting out while you're doing 80k an hour down.
I was like, yeah, crazy. Great. First day in the Australian team at training camp, and I've just binned it and taken down Brett Aitken.
What does breakfast of today look like, though?
Jeez, sometimes I even miss breakfast. You know?
Yeah, okay.
I'm a big. I love a couple of eggs on toast and a little. Yeah, you know, I'm pretty simple. You know, like I think if I'm away, like to be honest, like I'll just get my metabolism has slowed down. So yeah.
Looking at the bacon and eggs.
But, I'll be happy enough, you know, when I go away on a week tour or, you know, when I'm away with the team at Nationals, for example, just to get a loaf of fruit loaf, know, and just have a couple of pieces of toast.
A cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Just touching on your metabolism, do you remember what your lower skin folds were?
Well, we used to do them over six sites back then. So and they were I know by the time whenever I got to a peak event, they were normally always in the mid-20s.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And I think, you know, at in Sydney, I was pretty lean. Like I was down sort of in the low 20s. So it was I think over eight sites. It was low 30s.
Yeah, they do it over eight sites now, do they? They still do skin folds as much? Or
over seven now, man.
Seven, okay. Yep.
Yeah.
And the question that you know straight off the top of your head, what was your VO2 max?
Well, I have to keep reminding that Sassy, because they've got their records and they've got it framed on one of the walls in there. Well, it's not framed, but it's sitting up as a printout. Is my second highest.
Oh, okay.
Which is 93.6.
Yep.
And that was I think that was done in 1989. Funnily enough, we're still using that same lab. all the pain that goes through there is, I love it. Every time I walk in, just knowing the pain that's going to come out of that room is gold. But 93.9. It actually was on the back of Mexico.
Was it?
So yeah, okay. I've done and it was on the back of getting glandular fever. Actually had glandular fever pretty bad for about 2 months leading, and I just started coming good a couple of weeks before Mexico, and Charlie said, "Oh, well, you're going to Mexico,
yep."
4 weeks later, I rocked up for a VO2 max test in Adelaide, and I was 93.9 mils per kilogram per minute.
Which is, what's the average person?
60s.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. It's just blown. Was it, Stewie, were he up around that as well, was
yeah,
he?
Yeah, 92, yeah. And same with Brad McGee.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, how it's changed, like, the style of athletes these days, when we were talking about it before, you know, before we started, you know, was that the track athletes had to be aerobic beasts back then, because literally you were pedaling such small gears that you were aerobically inclined. If you were going to be good, you had to be able to pedal, which puts a lot more demand on the oxygen system. And whereas, like, the athletes these days are just absolute beasts in terms of strength and power, and
so their VO2s are going to be so much lower.
Yeah, so there's less of a demand. I mean, it's still important, you know. That's the thing. If we could combine the both and get the ultimate VO2 you know, combined with the ultimate strength and power, like, you know, then you've got your incredible athlete, you know. But it's just, it all comes down to time and what you can, you know, focus on and what you can
do.
So
what would the top athletes be sitting on now as far as VO2, like someone like Ganner or someone like that?
I mean, we get a lot coming in, and it obviously, like, your VO2 is, when they talk about VO2 max, it's relative, it's mils per kilogram per minute. So, like, body weight. So, like, I'm, you know, obviously much heavier now. Back then I was like 65 kilos.
I was gonna say,
So, you know, compared to, say, the track athletes of today, like, most of them are
80 kilos.
Yeah, 80 kilos. Yeah, yeah. So,
okay. And
so their raw VO2 is still huge.
Yeah.
It's just when you convert it down to mils per kilogram per minute, it looks a little bit more mediocre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's you know, it's rare to get guys over 80 these days.
Yeah.
What's more important in a, like, for you as a coach? What's more important these days? Like, what metric is more important?
To be honest, the biggest metric of all for me is the psychological skills.
I was hoping that would. Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, it's important, like, you know, and certainly at a TID level, the first thing we look at is, you know, what power are they putting out, you know, what. Yeah. But I like to go to the TID sessions just to look at them in the process, because, like, the shuttle run, you know, the beep test, or, you know, or if we're getting them to do a 2-minute test, it actually tells you a lot about, you know, how hard they're prepared to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot that can be read into, you know, like their background and, you know, the sport that they've done before. And, you know, I actually tested Isaac Rankin, you know, a few years ago, and he was – I was like, I want that kid, you know, I want him. But the problem was, he was already so far down the path of being, like, you know, number one AFL. It was impossible, you know, to ever get him in cycling, you know, but you could tell. I didn't know he was in footy at that time, but I knew that he had all the traits of a star athlete.
And
I think that's probably the most important metric of all.
No, I'd love to hear that. That's good. What else have we got, guys?
Well, I don't know. Where did this question come about hair strands from?
Oh, this one come from one of your athletes. out of curiosity, which strand of hair on your head are you most attached to?
Oh, God.
Can you guess who that come from?
Who did that come from? I want to know.
Listeners at home.
Someone who got a Norton PB this week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, their K's have just gone up a fair bit this week. I'm not even going to answer that.
Right. Now, we were talking about it last night on chat. So you just touched on before, you were the overall winner of the sprint jersey in the TDU. They never presented it to you. What's the story behind that?
No. Well, it's an interesting scenario that came up in that year. So that was the inaugural year of TDU.
Yep.
I was riding for Palmer's EDL, as I mentioned before, in that year. And they took me on because they knew that I was pretty quick. However, you know, there was still some pretty good guys there that year. Zabel was one of them. You know, Eric Zabel time was, like, green jersey in the Tour de France, you know, numerous times. So it was hectic, but I started chasing all the all the intermediate sprints, and of course you got points for the finale as well.
Yep.
And O'Grady was obviously on form that year. He won a couple of stages. I think he won the tour, obviously.
Yep.
And in the last stage, I think he got third. I think he got third, and it ended up that he was on the same points.
Right.
So they when they looked at it first, they thought that he had won the not just the yellow jersey or the ochre jersey, but also the sprint jersey. So they presented him with both on the final day. I'd been up there all week, and it came to the last day, and it turned out we're on the same points. They presented it to Stewie, and then about 20 minutes later, Mike Turter comes walking up and with a jersey going, sorry, we really fucked up here.
I reckon Turner's language might have been a bit more colourful than that.
And he presented me with the TAB jersey, the sprint jersey at that time, for the inaugural sprint jersey overall winner. Like, you know, and so I never got to be on the podium. I'm the only overall winner of the whole TDU to never be presented on the final day.
Stitched up.
God. I think we've touched on a lot of that.
Yeah, now. A lot of the next question.
Yeah, no, it's good. So, I mean, just to bookend it, what are your predictions for the upcoming Olympics around? Now, is this question more times or for a TP or what
are
we thinking?
That's not my question.
Oh.
It was actually sent in by Miss Piggy. I can't take credit for a lot of these questions.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Okay, that's a broad question. So, predictions in terms of, like, say,
I'd
TP?
I'd assume the
or?
TP, yeah.
TP?
Yeah.
TP.
Let's just say TP.
And specifically probably the Australian team.
look, I'd love to say we're gonna run away with it and win gold. Like, it's such a competitive event these days, TP. I've looked at it and GB have got a phenomenal team. Mm. As good as the Danes have been, as good as the Italians have been, on the Italians you've got Ganna and Milan.
Yeah.
You know, like these guys are freaks, you know. Having said that, I actually have already done my picks and I hope I'm wrong.
Okay.
but my pick is GB.
They just rode
didn't
a
they win the Euros or something?
No, I think they just rode a rapid Biggin? Time last night or the night before,
did
didn't they?
Yeah. I don't know.
In Nations Cup in Canada.
Is that right?
Yeah, sorry, Nations Cup.
Oh,
that's
Nations
what it
Cup.
Was.
Yeah, that's been on. So that actually was really important to them because they got disqualified at World Championships.
Yeah.
Did they?
So they didn't get any points at World Championships.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they won, like, in the qualifying, I think they rated a 53 or something like that.
Yeah, so they were on the borderline of, like, because you've got to be in the top 10 teams just to get the get a TP team in for Olympic Games. Yeah, so you know, when you look at the depth of those guys, you know, it's pretty crazy.
I think the team they
did a 46.
Oh, there you go.
The Nations Cup.
But I think that's...
Where is that?
That was in Milton.
In Milton. Milton's
one moment, please.
Milton's a slow track.
Yeah. Milton. Yeah.
Milton's one of the
But
hardest.
I think that was their... Average. Pretty much going to be their Olympic team that they rode over there.
Yeah, Hayter.
Hayter.
Dan. Charlie Tanfield and Oliver Wood.
Yeah. Hayter's freak. And who's... I've forgotten his name. The guy that ran third in the time trial at last
Tarling.
Year. Tarling, Josh Tarling.
He's still hanging onto the car in Paris-Roubaix.
He's
got a longer arm now. So,
you put him on the back end of that. He's almost as good as Ganna. He's ridiculous. So, and Hayter's my pick as the number one TP rider in the world at the moment.
Above
Ganna.
Wow.
Because you can ride him anywhere.
Yeah, okay.
And when he rode against Ganna the year before last, he was matching him. On time. and same amount of laps. I mean, those guys, they're doing like four laps just to finish a TP.
Yeah. It was amazing watching Ganna here at the Nations Cup, watch him do the last four laps.
Yeah, so it's insane. So at the moment...
GB.
GB, by
the I'm picking GB... GB v the Danes.
And they're just full of Australian coaches anyway over there.
Possibly GB versus Danes in the final and hopefully an Australian versus Italian, you know, in the
Bronzy.
Kiwis up there.
The
Kiwis will definitely be up there as well. I think that there's a few signs that they're slightly off target at the moment. You know, that maybe definitely not as good as last Olympics.
Yeah.
Mm. They'll be I think we're sitting pretty close with them at the moment. But the thing is, like, you know, Sam and Kel are, you know, world level teams pursuers, and we've got a bunch of new guys trying to break into the team, and that, you know, the void that left, you know, with Lee and
Alex
and Alex, you know, leaving was pretty substantial, you know, after that. So filling that gap has been something that they've been trying to do ever since the games finished, and realizing that, you know, there's only 3 years, you know, because it was the last games was in 21, right?
Yeah.
So it's been a hard slog, but I do think on their day that, yeah, that it's definitely a possibility, you know. And from what we saw at the last Olympics, anything can happen, right?
Yeah,
anything can happen.
Yeah.
So many things going on in a TP these
people
days.
Crashing, and not only us but other teams and.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Speaking of things going on.
Yeah, what have we got?
Our local Adelaide rider, Cactus, decided to roll off the front and win the Oceanas by herself.
She did. Massive.
She did. 33 seconds off the front.
Huge. So I was speaking to her. So that was Friday, the road race. So I was speaking to her coach Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
She went away after 30K.
Yeah.
Right. So 30K into the race. She done 80K solo.
Nice.
Yeah, so pretty much just held him at a 30-second gap and then just wore him down from there. And then she backed it up to run second in the TT on Saturday.
She's on fire.
That's what she was really hoping for. Also did have other podcast name, Shaquille Oatmeal.
Yep.
So her first Oceanas is a first year under 19. She ran 10th in the road race.
How good.
9th in the TT.
Ryan Kavanagh got the elite. He's been riding for a long time now. I think it was like 11 years between his last podium.
Yeah, right. I think Zach, he missed a medal by 3 seconds, did he?
Saw him in the background.
Yeah. 3 seconds, missed a medal by 3 seconds in the TT.
Fourth at Nationals, for fourth at Oshies.
Yeah. Yeah, just poor bugger.
I know, right?
Yeah.
You know, there was only one other Aussie in front of him, right?
Yeah.
So it was two Kiwis.
Because it was Gady, wasn't it?
No, Gady's elite. This is under 20.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But still a good ride. Like, you know, it's always going to be that circuit, I think, was going to be a bit difficult for him.
A bit tough for him, yeah. It's more of a power, big man course, yeah.
And as the listeners would know, a few weeks ago, Wang did a couple of full consecutive 5-day working weeks. And as of that, he has been top salesperson 2 days in a row this week. Congratulations, Wang.
Good work, old man.
I'm normally getting please explain to the managers at work, not all this praise. I don't like it, to be honest with you.
No, it's
not good.
Kudos.
It's not your style, Wang.
No.
Hey, just, I know that I forgot to actually give you the info before closing. Business on Wednesday. Perfect. But I did actually wear my watch.
Oh, yep.
All week?
Not all week, a couple of times.
Yeah.
Just got fucking annoying.
I do notice so over on Brett's arm there is another one too.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a Huawei, is it?
Hawaii.
Does that track your sleep as well?
Yeah, it does track your sleep. It's probably about the only thing I really look at.
Yeah, same.
I have something to show you.
So Wang, I need your expert opinion. So
yes, please.
This is on a Friday. I slept 8 hours and 27 minutes total sleep.
It's good. An
hour and a half REM. I don't know if that's good.
Yeah, that is good. Deep.
You love it deep. Yeah.
1 hour.
I was 1 hour and 47 minutes deep, and then five hours.
I'd be happy with 2 minutes deep. 32 minutes awake. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
You sent us one yesterday morning where your recovery was.
I was dead yesterday morning. 2%.
What does that mean?
That's today.
I don't know what that means.
That means I should be dead.
2% recovery. The lowest I've been 7.
So Brett, last week we went deep into
wearables
and everything like that. So I had to wear this annoying thing to bed.
What have you learned?
It's annoying.
Much, to be honest.
He can't sleep when he's got
well.
It on.
When I sleep well, I sleep well, and when I don't, I don't. No, but I think for me it's more so around because I got a new gig at work this week as well, so I knew I wouldn't sleep the best.
Yeah.
So just you yet. Didn't tell us that in your week.
No. Well, I forgot. So I'm just double hatting at the moment. So I'm doing my two roles at once at the moment.
Double wage?
I thought, no.
Some of your best days are after when you haven't had any. Look, the night before we broke the world record, the first world championship we won, had 1 hour of sleep.
Yeah.
Really?
Could not sleep.
Yeah. We were talking about that too, weren't we? Like, if something big or whatever, like, I just get so excited, I don't sleep.
Before we did the big 250K ride on Good Friday, my recovery was in the red at like 20%. Mm. The day after, it was in the green at 90%.
Wow.
And that's like, okay, 250K recovery days it is.
Okay. Like, I reckon, there's a couple of those days. I reckon one of the, I think it was, I knew I had to do CHOP, and this is when CHOP was still in the
subcorp.
You can do the laps.
Yep.
And I remember, like, I think it was Mitch and Scott Mulhern and Sunday were like, "Oh, we'll do extras after." I'm like, "Fuck, I got to like."
They're doing extras.
This is all new,
now.
You know. I only started cycling when I was 30, right? Yeah. So I'm like, "Oh fuck, oh god!" Didn't sleep a wink, and then like just had to. had the best 5 hours of my life. Yeah, it was great for once.
Well, they've started bringing back the extras, but they're doing it before CHOP at the moment. So Ollie and Zach, they've been doing like 2 hours before CHOP.
That's outrageous.
I like
getting
it.
There, so. But with on the socials last week, we did put the question up around the wearables and what everyone uses. I think Garmin was the most popular one from what I mean. Yeah. And the majority of the reason that people was wearing them was for their sleep. No, not for their clock. For their sleep. So, but a lot of your athletes, Brett, they wear the Oura Ring.
Oura Ring, I think Sassy purchased something like 50 Oura Rings.
Yeah.
And
you can get me one?
Yeah. I can't even get
you
one.
You could pose, motherfucker.
<I'll>
Down
like
on one knee.
cheap either.
No, they're not.
They're like $300 US.
They did give me one to try out initially, and I had to give it back, obviously. But they're pretty cool, like in terms of, I mean, obviously some of the stuff, I think it is the way to go going forward, you know, in terms of being able to track that stuff better. It's just no one's really marrying up the two, like what you're doing in terms of training versus
how you need something to combine.
You need almost like some sort of like Whoop or something to come into with Training Peaks to give you some instead of like an additional metric there because you've got obviously your TSB and all that. You need some other little bit of an additional metric.
Yeah, at the moment, so Sassy use like the athlete management system, which is AMS, you know, it's funded by AIS.
Yeah.
And they've got all these, they've built the software behind basically, to
build a macro.
But the problem is it's still separate.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the part. Yeah, you want it to be fully emerged with Training Peaks or Today's Plan or whatever other system you're using. So
you guys, you've just gone over to Training Peaks, most of your athletes?
Gone back to
been?
Training Peaks.
Gone back to, from Today's Plan?
From Today's Plan, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd held out because we actually had an existing Training Peaks account all the way. When we went over to Today's Plan, I was asking Sassy to still pay for Training Peaks because we had a whole lot of other athletes that had moved on and just been using Training Peaks.
Yeah.
And we had all their data that, you know, from back in the day as well. So, we were maintaining a Training Peaks account all the way up to about 3 months before we had to go back to Training Peaks.
Oh.
And then they forced me to get rid of it because they were paying for this account. And then 3 months later, they said, Oz Cycling said, "Oh, no, we're moving back from Today's Plan to Training Peaks."
Told us that 3 months ago.
it was far out.
So we did have one further shout out.
Yeah.
David Latte, our competition winner, the Cervelo Radsum. He got his Focus frame set a couple of weeks ago, but he's finished the build. So, gave that to his son.
That is so wholesome. Yeah.
And son will be racing it next Sunday at the junior tour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Muria Peninsula.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
So, with that, a little bit of wholesome goodness, let's jump in right into it. The main reason why we exist. So let's see who, if I can talk, who's been spinning up the summit this week, and check out the times for the folks who have been giving us a show. Might be the fast guys.
What's in that coke?
I don't know.
Bundy or something.
Something. It might be the slower ones, which isn't this week, but it might be everyone in between. But like we said, we'll dive into their rides and data a little bit more robustly, and then we'll see who and what has caught our eyes on the leaderboards for some hand picks for some fun analysis. Did we have a hand pick this week?
Not sure.
I couldn't decide.
That's okay.
But I was advised by Mr. Harry over here that
Mr. Wang, thank you.
Mr. Wang.
That there was some rapid times this week.
Yep.
So
Brett, who of the fastest man and woman of the week?
Yeah, okay. So we've got at the top of the list here, Shit Shram. It's not a very good advertisement, is it? doing a 12:22.
Which is a PB.
PB.
Yeah.
No, that was a 5-year PB.
5 years.
5 years.
Yeah, wow. So he did the 12.
5 seconds?
29 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's about where my PB was.
We won't give away who it is, but he will be heading over to meet his lovely partner soon at the end of this month. And then he's doing some racing in Belgium himself.
We do have some power and heart rate data, don't we?
Yeah, what do you average?
434 watts
of power.
Not bad. I'll do that for a minute.
I'll give myself 30 seconds.
I don't know if I've ever ridden behind this guy, but he's just got the most muscular glutes that I've ever seen on a bike rider.
Really?
Yeah, I'd almost turn for him. So. he's just got so much power there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice. And who's the fastest woman this week?
Okay, the fastest woman is Wahooligan.
Wahooligan.
Wahooligan in a 13:49.
Wow.
Not a surprise.
not too far off a PB, really. Hey?
She's gunning for the quam.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we'll get her under. We'll get her under 13. So. All right.
Mr. Wang.
Yeah, Mr. Wang. What do you got?
I'll just read out my own name.
So yeah.
Oh, look at me.
I'm so fast. It's true.
All right. So we've just. No time bracket this audience. It's a 12-minute time bracket,
I was advised that.
We have myself, Colossal Wang. 12:25 yesterday on Supers. 390, so just a little bit lower than my standard 400 watts that I do up there, low heart rate. So, that was on Supers yesterday, as I mentioned.
Listen to it. Look at the smile. The fucking glow as he just rattles off about himself.
Yeah. Wang talks about Wang.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we have...
Wang goes up.
In third Wang.
Did you ever do it when you were like 25?
No. Well, yeah, obviously we did do it, but I don't know what their times were. No. I would have liked to have known.
Wooden wheels would have not been aero.
No, we were on steel frames and shallow wheels back then, weren't we? So
that's Schmals.
Yeah, but I don't know what we were. Schmals. Yeah, you only had them if you were really lucky. So then next we've got another podcast favourite, the Beater. He did a 12:30 yesterday. He's got no power because his pedals are shit himself at the moment. So... anyone out there, if they want to give him some new Favero pedals?
Do you know what, though? When you're going that fast, I couldn't care.
Yeah, it would have been over. It'd be over 400 for him. 164 beats per minute. We then have with a time of 12:33. This kid's back in form as well. Good to see him back on the bike after a bit of a hiatus. That PB's not right. He's got a sub 12 PB, but he did a 12:33 yesterday. Also, no power. He didn't even ride with his Garmin yesterday. He was recording from his phone.
Love that.
Yeah. And then we have today on Church Ride, Wheelie Tired, new PB as well. So if you wanted to change your name, let us know. So he did have a PB at 12:37. He's done a 12:33. 389 watts, 165 beats. And then lastly, we have the Chonk, also a PB as well today on Church Ride.
Yeah.
Did have a PB at 12:52, 12:33,
solid.
330 watts. So he's a small
man.
You
know? Yeah.
He's a small lad.
He was very excited about coming on Church Ride. He was like, yeah, approved.
He's a good lad. Mm-hmm. So that's it for the men. Now for the
women. The women, Alex.
I've had everything. Anyway, yes, the women. We have Savage Sweet Potato. Rolled at 1852, 207 watts, 159 beats per minute.
Hang on, you missed someone.
You missed
the second.
I'm going backwards, all right? Calm down.
How's that
going? Sorry, a new to the potty.
Yes.
Swim Bonk Run has done a 1605 as part of a 140K day.
Yeah, she was on Supers yesterday.
76 beats per minute.
She's got a bit of a reputation to live up to. Her brother's pretty rapid.
Yep. As I said, Savage Sweet Potato was here. Coming in third place, Miss Piggy with an 1855.
Is that technically because she's in the 18s? Wasn't there a she had to get 18 or with Queen Laquifah?
Queen Laquifah, what was the bet?
No, they have to get PBs.
They have to get PBs, yeah.
So that was the day that Supercyclists rolled away from her. So she did 160 beats per minute, 247 watts. Fourth place, 1928 with a PB of 1701. The fucking Pelican.
It's so aggressive, isn't it?
It's so aggressive. Yeah. Only 120 beats. So literally just cruising. And lastly, only 10 seconds off of her PB, 1938. This is the Legend of Zorro.
Well done.
176 beats per minute. So she's probably working.
Yeah.
She's very, very small.
So this week, part of Alex and Cashy's weather, we've got none.
We don't have a hand-picked, but
we did have...
I think our hand-pick last week was Cactus's dad.
Yes.
He got another PB this week.
Oh, did he?
I think he went another.
What did we name him?
Prickly Bear. And he did. He told Cactus he loved the name, so he was happy to get a shout-out. But he done another PB, but I think he's 3 seconds off of the 16 minutes.
Again, just to re-up all everyone that had PBs, if you want to change your name,
if you know
just
who
slide
you are.
Into Wang's...
slide into my DMs.
Yeah, and he'll be more than happy to fix that right up. Now, Mr. Wang.
What day do I go up Norton something this week?
Wang's Weather, proudly sponsored by Wellness League podcast.
She fucking loves that.
So the pick of the week, pick day this week is Monday again, so tomorrow. So between the hours of 12:30 and 3:30, if you can just get off work a little bit early, there will be some west-southwesterlies. I like those wind directions, between 11 and 13 kilometres an hour.
Yeah, because just for the listeners that haven't listened to the potty, but we discussed wind, what was the best wind?
West-southwest.
There you go.
Flatulent.
Yep. Mm. You get a tailwind on the straight and the switchbacks.
It's not like running. There's no rules on the wind.
No.
Assistance.
No.
Hey, mate, if it's cyclone, you're going to get us out there. Shout out, yes. Also, let us know if you do a PB on Monday.
Yeah.
So I'm
make sure
give
that the
weatherman
is correct.
Yep. I love
Mr.
this.
Mr. Wang Martin over here.
Alex. Wang Martin.
You'll be bringing your own almanac out, essentially.
You're old enough to remember them. The old Keith Martin almanac. That used to be Dad's Father's Day present every year.
So.
Oh, I did see your dad today.
Did
myself
really?
And the real Shamoy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Riding his 160-inch gear.
Yeah, had his partner in front. Yep. Down... Where was it?
I don't know.
Northeast Road.
You were telling the story.
Northeast Road. Yeah. Yeah. Rolled out to him.
Anyway.
Alex, what's been happening? What's happening this
up?
Week?
Yeah. So, Adelaide Hill Cycling Club, they're going to start their round one of the Alp to All Adelaide Series Fox Creek. That's on Sunday 21st.
I am going to be racing that.
Really?
Come out.
Because you're on, said last week.
I believe A grade's five laps.
Yeah.
Times up Fox Creek.
I'll give you a hot tip. Get on the tandem.
Get on the tandem.
There might be a tandem in that race.
Is there?
This week.
Okay.
Wow.
Was Freeburg over here?
No.
Oh, Gussie? Yeah. I did see he was doing a bit of tandem stuff. Yeah.
We've also got Adelaide Mountain Bike Club, Saturday 20th of April with an XCM at O'Halloran Hill. We've got the Oz Cycling SA Junior Tour that's combined with SCC South Coast, Fleuro Peninsula in the Southern Vales, starting on Saturday the 20th. Inside Line Mountain Bike Club are running the State Downhill Series Round 1 at Fox Creek on Sunday the 21st. Mountain Gambier Cycling Club are doing a Soldiers Memorial Race on the Yarl Circuit. Yarl.
Yarl.
Yarl on Thursday 25th, which is Anzac Day. And I saw on Entry Boss today, NCC have announced their winter crit program starting in June.
This makes me happy. Wayne can start giving back.
Oh, giving back.
Can you imagine giving back, though, in the cold, blustery conditions down there?
Sorry, I'll just put a jacket on. Yeah. You can bring me extra clothes.
Bring more clothes for you, yeah. Anyway, for more details, please check Entry Boss.
Yes, indeed.
Ladies, gentlemen, boys, girls, Wang's weather, all creatures in between, if you have enjoyed yourself, why don't you give us a follow through your favourite podcast app and access all areas through YouTube as well. So please subscribe, hit the bell icon, and don't forget to tell all your friends and share it with everyone.
Now, we're all over the socials, well, I am, and we'll give you updates, info, and let you know when new episodes are out, along with our podcast news and information. And if you want to support the podcast, head to our Buy Me a Coffee page. If you donate, we'll give you a shout-out on the podcast next week.
Yep, and we would love your feedback and to know your thoughts. So hit us up. Let's have a chat through our Facebook or Instagram page, or shoot us something through to our email at radlatonline@gmail.com. And with that...
here we go.
Where can you buy and sell used shrimp?
Hi, Alex.
It's the prawn shop. See you on the summit.
See ya.
Bye.